1 through 15. And in the Church Bible, it is on page 483. Please stand. Thank you. All right. Okay. 89, 1 through 15. I will sing of the Lord's unfailing love forever. Young and old will hear of your faithfulness. Your unfailing love will last forever. Your faithfulness is enduring as the heavens. The Lord said, I have made a covenant with David, my chosen servant. I have sworn this oath to him. I will establish your descendants as kings forever. They will sit in your throne for now and until eternity. All heaven will praise your great wonders. Lord, myriads and angels of praise you for your faithfulness. For who in all heaven can compare with the Lord? What mightiness angel is anything like the Lord? The highest angelic powers stand in awe of God. He is far more awesome than all who surround his throne. O Lord God of heaven's armies, where is anyone as mighty as you, O Lord? You are entirely faithful. You rule the oceans. You subdue their storm-tossed waves. You crushed the great sea monster. You scattered your enemies with your mighty arm. The heavens are yours, and the earth is yours. Everything in the world is yours. You created it all. You created north and south. Mount Tabor and Mount Hermon praise your name. Powerful is your arm. Strong is your hand. Your right hand is lifted high in glorious strength. Righteousness and justice are the foundation of your throne. Unfailing love and truth walk before you as attendants. Happy are those who hear the joyful call to worship, for they will walk in the light of your presence, Lord. May the Lord add a blessing to this word. Thank you.
So the Simmons household kind of had an evening last evening, and so because of that, there was a lack of sleep, and I might appear slightly a little bit out of sorts today. I want to just be upfront and tell you that. One of the things that I think a lot of the preaching team enjoys about Grace Christian Fellowship, what we enjoy about you guys, is that you guys are a pretty gracious congregation, and you guys like look over sometimes our like quite large faults or fallacies in some ways, and I thank you for that, and remember your graciousness a little bit today. I might just lose my train of thought or suddenly, where was I again? That might become part of what's going on today, so thank you so much. I appreciate you. So do we have our fancy graphic? I always like our fancy graphic. Who knew that Larissa, who wasn't here, worked so hard on our fancy graphic? I think it's great. And I want to start out by asking this question regarding creation and Psalms. And we've been talking about it for a while now. And at this point, I know my wife's going to do this in a few weeks. But I want to hear from you real briefly. Is there anything you guys have been hearing, experiencing, opening yourself up to in this journey through Psalms and creation that we've been on together? Chirp, chirp, huh? Oh.
I have to be thankful for the lessons that we get from realizing that we are out there.
There are a lot of blessings of God every day for every one of us. Pretty cool. I can be ungrateful sometimes and just like look straight over that. Sean, what do you...
It makes me really feel grateful for every animal that God has created, and every person, and every animal is an individual, mastercrafted by the wonderful Lord God. Yep.
Well, that's a fine theologically crafted statement. Going off of that, I enjoy going to the zoo a lot, and one of the reasons I love going to a zoo or a natural history museum is I feel like I kind of get to experience God's creativity when I go to those places. I go, ooh, I didn't know that. That's so cool. I'll do Sissy and Colleen, and then I'll move on. Sissy?
I think being positive in the things where you have in life,
Sounds great. Colleen? So not just being grateful for the animals and grateful for the air, but grateful for the other people in our community that, as it turns out, are part of God's creation. I, it turns out, am part of it. One of the big takeaways I hope that there is for everyone here, and a big takeaway for me as we've been talking through this sermon series, is that every time that I'm out in creation, whether it's just on a walk with my kids, or whether it's some great adventure at the beach or off in the woods, is that every time that's an opportunity for me to experience God. Every time is an opportunity for us to experience the Lord, which I think is a pretty cool thing, and is a great thing, like a great thing for us to be reminded of during the summer when many of us, some of us here, apparently who aren't here today included, are out on some great, awesome adventure. And even when we're on some great, awesome adventure of some kind, we can still experience all God has for us. That the experience of God isn't just here on Sunday mornings, although I do think it is, but it is also in the experience of God's creation as a whole. So let's pray real quick. I don't always do this, but I want to today. Lord, I thank you that you communicate yourself. You communicate yourself through ordinary people like me, and you communicate yourself through the ordinary things of your extraordinary creation. I thank you for that this morning. I thank you for your extraordinary, ordinary communication. Amen. So I want to start off today by admitting a little bit that to some churches, to some communities, it might be pretty weird for us to talk about experiencing God in the midst of creation. During the last 150 years, especially in America, in particular in the last 70, the belief in cultivating or seeing God in creation has come on hard times in many cases. There are many movements and there are many people who have not a distaste, but maybe a pessimism regarding God's creation, or don't see experiencing God as in creation as an important thing. Now, this is something that I don't think is the greatest thing in the world, but that's what I think. It kind of makes my skin crawl, and I kind of freak out. So if you really want to try and freak me out after church today, you can walk up to me and talk about, oh, how creation isn't that great, and I'll just kind of like try and not quake, and I'll just try and smile and nod a little bit. I'll try and smile and nod. Well, all that to say is that sometimes seeing God in creation isn't that important to everyone. Even in churches, it's just not as cool as it used to be. God's going to burn it all up anyway, is what some people say. And I just want to note that that might be one thing that's us being weird as a congregation, but I hope is a weird that brings fruit and life to your life. Now, today we're talking about the infamous Psalm 89. I call it infamous because in most youth groups of Bible-thumping youth groups across America, Psalm 89 is known as the longest psalm. It's the longest one. It's like 2.5 pages in some Bibles. It's really long. You just can't believe it. I remember going on and on and on reading it when I was in high school, being like, what is this thing even about anyway? It just keeps going. I got to the end and I was like, what's the beginning part of it about anyway? But Psalm 89 dialogues and posits two fundamental aspects of God's character in the Old Testament and puts those two aspects side by side. The first is God as creator, as inspiring and bringing life to all things, being over all these things, having sight and foreknowledge and seeing into all these things, having a perceptive understanding of these things. On the other hand, it posits God as just. God is not just any just, but a steadfast just. A just that is faithful. A just that isn't leaving you out in the ditch somewhere, even though it might feel like it sometimes. It's a just that is promised to not leave you alone. It's a just that says it will reorder things the way they are meant to be. If we talk generally about justice is a pretty big word for only having so many letters in it. There's a lot of different kinds of justice that people like to talk about in the world. I like to think justice pretty simply as taking stuff that's out of right relationship and trying to bring it into right relationship of some kind. Or maybe it's trying to like mitigate the gap of not right relationshipness. It's trying to reorder things so that that order is working properly. Now, you might be able to talk to legal scholars, Greek scholars, weirdo scholars that I can't even name, social justice people, all sorts of different people, and all of them are going to have a slightly different understanding or talk about justice, because justice is always relative to a particular thing. For instance, I like to talk about justice with respect to God's character a lot, whereas some people might like to talk about justice with respect to American law, talk about justice with respect to the environment, talk about justice with respect to individual rights. Justice is always with respect to something, which is one of the things that makes justice actually kind of complicated, believe it or not. But for the people of God in the Old Testament, this is a fundamental belief. And I think if we put these two core values together of creation and justice, we begin to see what God's vision of beauty is in our world. We begin to see what God's vision is for beauty and how God puts ecosystems and our diverse animal populations and our diverse world all together. It also tells us what God's vision is for us as the people of God. It doesn't show us what beauty is. It shows us how God's beauty works. And that is that this psalm is positing God as harmonious. God as a being of harmony who seeks to create order through harmony. Now, if you are if you're like one of those people who likes Bible words, most frequently folks associate the Bible word shalom with peace, saying the peaceful presence of God, the peace that we may experience in our own hearts and our own communities because of God's work. But shalom also means harmony. It also means for a community, for a group of beings to be working it harmoniously with one another. So you'll say, what is harmony, and what is the guy who's least musically talented of all the pastoral team talking about harmony? Why is that person talking about harmony? That doesn't really make sense. He's not even defining it yet. If you Google it, harmony, it'll simply say, is a combination of sounded musical notes to produce music. It isn't just one musical note, it's several. They're working together collectively in making such music. Isn't that wonderful? That's something that we do like every Sunday. That's what the worship band does. They try and make and cultivate a harmony. But this harmony isn't just heard or experienced, it's music, it's seen. It's felt, it's tasted. Have you ever, I'm sure, I don't know if we've got any culinary masters in the room, but there are certainly many culinary masters who try and ingest the harmony of food, that want to have foods with a balance of multiple tastes that are all working together, and get frustrated when there are tastes that don't work together very, very well. This is what bad drip coffee is, right? When you get one taste and all you can taste is like burnt rubber. Whereas, you know, we Portlanders love our fancy drip coffee sometimes. Is a drip coffee that has all these different notes in it. It's like it has toffee and it has cherry and it has a little bit of South African dirt, which is different than North African dirt. But beauty, my point is that beauty and harmony aren't just in the sounds that we hear. It's in our taste. It's in our sight. It's in the beauty of a painting, right? In a painting, you have multiple colors that are working together to produce a picture. Have you ever looked at a painting that had a nice frame on it and was just black and said, that's a beautiful painting? Probably not. You've said, that looks like a black sheet of paper. What are you talking about? Harmony is multiple colors working in balance with one another, not just one working on its own. Now, last time I preached, I talked about mountains and where mountains are in God's creation. And I guess today I'm going to talk about something more popular among us Oregonians and PNWers, which is, sorry, my daughter's distracting me. I'm going to get going in a second. Which is the Oregon coast. Boy, oh boy, do we love the Oregon coast here in Oregon. And I think it's great when you get to take someone to the coast for the first time and their jaw, and you just see their jaw drop. I got to take Stephanie for her first trip to the coast. It was a road trip we went on together. And she was in complete awe of the coast. She like couldn't imagine it. She was like, "Why? I've heard the coast is great. Why do people think this is so cool?" And then she got there and she witnessed the sound of the waves, the moving from the waves from what seemed like a mile away on this huge beach filled with diverse life. And she went, "Wow." And we were simply content to walk on the beach for what seemed like an hour in silence, just taking it in. I have some friends in Ocean Shores who live in the town that witness people see the beach for the first time often. And it doesn't matter who it is, they say, that they see the folks walk up to the beach and just stop in awe. It doesn't matter who they are or what background they're from, they stop in awe in seeing the Oregon coast. And just as the Oregon coast is beautiful, there are things, there are natural processes that are going on that define how the coast works, right? That, in fact, make the coast. Who would have thought that there's a giant, huge object, 25% the size of our Earth, rotating around our Earth a few hundred thousand miles away? Is it a few hundred thousand or is it like a couple million? I think it's only a few hundred thousand miles away. a few hundred thousand miles away, that it rotates around us, and its gravitational field is so strong it makes the tides go back and forth in a daily rhythm, in an hourly rhythm, in a yearly rhythm, and an even a deca-yearly rhythm. Every 10 years or more, I think, there's a rhythm of how the tides are working. And then somehow, mysteriously, the sand from the ocean comes up onto the shore, and some of it stays and some of it goes, and it both accumulates and it goes away quite mysteriously to us, doesn't it? And then on top of that sand that's there at the coast, there's also the countless beings that have come to depend on that rhythm of the tide and on the sand itself. There's kelp and there's seaweed and there's plant life and there's algae that has grown dependent on this place where the land meets the sea in all its beauty. And then there are animals in all these different forms, not just one animal, but several animals, some that crawl, some that have eight legs and should terrify us like arachnids, but they don't. There are starfish. There is countless marine life, isn't there? There are fish, and there are the what might be annoying, depending on your point of view, seagulls that are flying up and down and eating. There are the sand dollars and the shellfish. There is all this diversity of life that we experience when we go to the coast. And that diversity of life doesn't operate with one note trying to take over all the others. No, they are all working in a harmony together. All of those beings have a role in their community and have an importance in their community. It's not just one thing flying out on its own. It's multiple things working in cooperation with each other. In fact, if you look at any ecosystem, I think you can see this same harmony working. Whether it's a pond in a backyard somewhere, whether it's in the forest, whether it's at the top of a mountain, in a swamp, in a desert. Everywhere we go, there is this life that is working with in harmony with itself. Where every being, every piece of life, even the non-living pieces of it, have a role. They have something that it gives to everything else. This is such harmony. This harmony is in all of creation. This tells us what God's vision is for our community and for who we are as people. This, in effect, is God's social ethic and social vision for our world, is it not? That we are called to be a community that operates in harmony. That's what the whole church is, bowing before Jesus, is supposed to be. It is supposed to be a community of all sorts and kinds of different people who are singing and living and operating in a chimungus harmony together. And it's not just one kind of person in this harmony, but all kinds of different people that are built in this harmony, that are put together, living in a harmonious relationship with each other. Each individual person having a harmonious gift, giving to other aspects of the harmony of this community. It is not to be just one person being too loud above the rest. It is not just one voice, but all the voices operating together as one. Harmony is reflected, it can be reflected in our social relationships. It can be reflected in our family. It can be reflected in how we go and live in our world. I think we are called, this is what it means to be made in the image, the imago Dei of God, to be partakers and livers in God's harmony. Not livers as in the organ, but people who live in God's harmony. This is what it means to be part of the imago Dei, of being made in the image of God, to be partakers in God's harmony in our world around us. And also such harmony in relationship with God. Because that harmonious relationship is something that we each can personally have. It's not something kept away in locked doors that's super special, but is an ordinary thing that we have the capacity to see and experience every day. Yet, if we are very honest about our lives, our world, our environments and our ecosystems, that we live in a world that is full of incongruence and dissonance, where perhaps one musical sound or one being dominates over others, it drowns out others, or maybe something isn't there at all that's supposed to be, where the harmony is out of sync. A note is out of tune, it's out of place, it's not operating in proper timing. I think if we're all honest, we can experience this dissonance in our lives. This dissonance in practical ways, this dissonance in social relationships around us and our relationships with people. This dissonance, just like this harmony, is all the way down to our soul. We can feel this dissonance inside of ourselves. And this, if you want to know what my favorite example of this dissonance is, this incongruity, I'll give you an example. You're all going to know it. Nails on a chalkboard. Everyone in the room starts screaming. This dissonance has caused more dissonance. This dissonance is something that when we experience, it makes us lose touch with ourselves. Not only lose touch with what's going on inside us, but we lose touch with the harmony of God. And we begin to lose touch with others. And the hilarity of this dissonance is that we will go to extreme crazy lengths to find such harmony again, frequently in going the opposite direction of the harmony of God, right? Give it to me, give it to me, give it to me, running all the way away, seeking to experience God's harmony, but just to be flying in the wrong direction as fast as we can. Just as we live in a world of harmony, we live in a world of dissonance. Too much of any one thing can destroy an environment or an ecosystem. I went to the zoo this week. Mark Newberg's work, he's our lay delegate. I didn't get to see him again. I always mean to see him when I go to the zoo, but I didn't make it. And one of the cutest animals you can see at the zoo is a sea otter. Sea otters are a unique mammal. They are the mammal that has the complete and utter choice. It can spend all of its time in the water and be fine, or it can spend all of its life on land and be fine. Sea otters have one of the most durable and soft and protective coats of fur on them of any animal that we know of. And they are meant to live in harmony with the fish and the sea and the land. Yet, they've been hunted to almost utter extinction. They used to be up from the tip of Alaska all the way down to Baja California. There are two ranges that exist of the sea otter today, this cute, beautiful animal. One range is just north of Washington State. It's right off the edge of the state of Juan de Fuca. There are some sea otters. I've seen one actually before in Puget Sound. The other is there's about a 300-mile range in Alaska where sea otters live. They've been hunted almost to complete extinction. But that's not the only animal, is it? We know of countless animals, fauna. We know of countless forms of life that are on the edge of extinction or have gone extinct to this day. Because we as humans have chosen not to live as part of God's harmony, not live in harmony with creation. I'm building on it. Sorry. Kelly was starting to get frustrated at me. I'm starting to stomp on his toes a little bit. I think it's great.
It's preaching my message. That's
why. I'm priming for you. That's what I'm doing.
That's good.
This harmony is something that is in all of our environment, and we as humans have the choice to try and cultivate such harmony, or we have the choice to destroy such harmony. That is one of the painful, painful realities of the age we live in. This dissonance, though, isn't just in our environment and our ecosystems. It's in our families, and it's in our hearts. There once was a man, though, a wisdom sage. He rarely walked into town. He lived every day of his life in harmony with God. And he desperately, desperately wanted his entire world to partake in that same harmony. Yet everywhere he looked in his culture, he found dissonance, incongruousness with God's harmony. He lived in a culture, too, where everyone said as much as they wanted that they wanted to live in harmony with God. Yet there were people who lived in hurt and shame and weren't allowed such harmony with God. This wisdom sage began to find others and teach them his harmony way, his way of trying to make harmony with his social relationships around us. It turns out the wisdom teacher really did have something to say, something really cool. And there were those in his society also who had much to lose in the sight of such harmony, that the harmony meant bringing people to justice, and that scared them. So these people brought poor justice to this wisdom sage, attempting and conniving to the best they could to give this man a death. a death devoid of any harmony that might rob him of any harmony that he might ever experience in this life or in what might live beyond. This is the cross of Christ. In the midst of the darkest dissonance in our world, the harmony of God still sings. In the midst of the experience of God's harmony, I personally get to experience the creation and the God who sustains creation. But in my experience of this harmony, God leads me somewhere. God leads me to my places of dissonance. God leads me to my places of hurt and my places of pain. This dissonance is not meant to be shoved or cast aside from me. It's part of who I am. It's part of the harmony in and of itself. It is a paradox. And it forces me to see and to realize the places and the community and the relationships around me that live in dissonance, that don't operate in harmony together. It makes me force the places where there is no such harmony inside myself. This is what the harmony of God calls us to. Today I'm getting ready to close. I hope I haven't gone too long yet. The harmony and the Imago Dei. One way that we can make harmony, each and every one of us, with creation, with other people, with God, is to remind other people that they are also made in harmony, made in the holy image of God. The more different someone is from you, the more powerful it is for you to say that to them. The less dissonance that collapses. And this is my encouragement to you, to find another person who is different from you, who sees the world differently from you. Maybe they're lost. Maybe they're in a place of extreme pain, in a place of shame, a place where they don't want anyone to know them, a place where maybe they don't even believe that the image of God might exist. And say to that person, whisper to them, I believe in you. I believe that the image of God is alive in you. I believe in God's image in you. I believe in God's trust. I trust in the image of God in you. And that might be a powerful way to awaken someone to the harmony of God that lives all around them. As I've hinted just a few minutes ago, spiritual life of God's harmony is a twofold paradox. On the one hand, we have to acknowledge where there is God's harmony in our hearts and in our lives. We have to see it, to feel it, to hear it, to taste it, to smell it, to experience the God all around us and in all of our life. We are to draw near to that harmony and to grasp onto it, hold onto it as much as we can. We are to take joy and happiness and pleasure in such harmony. And for some of you today, I encourage you to take hold, to grasp this harmony, take charge, hold it, take pleasure in it, jump for joy in it. On the other hand, we have to acknowledge where God's harmony is not in our world and not in our lives. We have to lament the destructive dissonance that is all around us. We cannot and should not allow ourselves to believe that the dissonance simply does not exist. We must hear the dissonance. We must taste it, feel it, see the pain of such incongruity in our world. There may be something that you can do about such incongruity. It might be that the only thing that you can do is lament and cry that it's there. And to others of you this morning, I say, take the time. I give you permission to lament and cry that there is such dissonance in our lives and in our world. What makes your heart break? And then, at the place where the harmony and the dissonance meet, that is a place of pain probably for you. But that might be the place. That might be the place of your deepest calling. That might be the place God is calling and trying to bring you to. take a look on the back of your bulletin if you have a moment. I just have the three questions here. I just ask you to reflect on, where is God's harmony in you and your life? Where can you experience it in your environment? Also, where can you experience the dissonance in your environment? And depending on the two, what is God calling you to? Finally, celebrate or lament, whatever you need to do. So I'm going to be, as we get ready for responding to worship, the funny thing about us pastoral folks is we want to know the places of your pain, the places of your harmony and your dissonance. So I'm going to be up here as we respond in worship. And if you want to share it with someone and you don't feel like you got someone around you to share it with, then you can share it with me. And I think one other person of our pastoral team might make it up here too. We'll see which one. But you can also share with them. Where is your dissonance? Where is your harmony? And what is God calling you to? Amen.